Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're from the Cover Up Cafe right down the street from the UFO Museum in Roswell, New Mexico. Welcome to our show. And we got an audience here at the Cover Up, so if you'd like to applaud to let everybody know we're here. Later on, we'll go to the audience and have some questions, and we'll try to make room for that. Later in the show, we have Jesse Marcel, Jr., and in addition to that, we have quite a few other guests, and I don't want to start naming them all because we won't get to Yvonne Smith, who is our first guest. And Yvonne Smith is really one of the key players in the UFO field and the paranormal field. Around, and Yvonne, last time I saw you, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you, Jerry.
Nice the last time I saw Yvonne was in Laughlin, but since then, she's been to Italy.
Italy, yes.
Tell everyone a little bit what you're currently working on. What did you talk about here at the UFO Museum?
Well, here I'm working on my three lectures, actually two and a half lectures, and basically it's talking about my upcoming book, Chosen, Recollections of UFO Abductions Through Hypnotherapy, a culmination of some of the cases. I work with hundreds of cases, so I'm putting them together in my first book in as much detail as I can.
Yeah, we talked about some of those incidents on our previous interview, not too much about the book, but about some of the things you've been doing. And we have that on the website as well. People can go over and listen to that, so we won't cover that too much. But let's talk a little bit about Roswell, and you're from L.A.?
Yes, from near the Pasadena, California area.
Okay. And have you been to Roswell before?
Oh, yes. This is, I believe, my fourth visit here.
So have you ran across some good subjects here in research, or basically you just came here to lecture?
Well, I have my table set up, and it's I have met some very nice people who are sharing their experiences with me, something very personal. A couple of people told me they've never been able to talk to anybody about these things. And after my lecture, of course, I was approached by several people that related to my lecture and the slides that I had shown, the visuals.
Yeah, what kind of visuals do you have in your presentation?
I have...
I mean, you weren't there when they were abducted.
No,
were
you? Not yet.
that's your goal. Like
that's
me. I want to go knock on the saucer and interview the little girl guy and say, "Hey, tell me a little bit about it."
Right.
No, go ahead. Tell me what the visuals are about.
In my one lecture, Anatomy of an Abduction, I put together a series of slides which depicts what happens in an abduction experience from beginning to end, including the how a person feels when they're taken, how they're taken. And this is just from cases that I have studied and worked
with. Is there a common denominator about how they feel, or is
Absolutely.
It run the gamut? There is a common denominator.
And this is what I had explained to the audience, is that we have to go where the research takes us. And after establishing so many hundreds of patterns, we know that now people experience missing time while they're driving, or people experience what we call the bedroom visitation. They're rendered paralyzed, then they're taken up into a beam of light onto the craft. Then the descriptions of the curved hallway and the examination rooms.
These keep coming back pretty much the same.
Absolutely, and that's why I put this together for people who are not well versed in the subject. And my goal is to keep getting this out to the general public and general media.
When you've done so many of these, I don't know how many people you have talked to. You probably don't recall offhand, but. Hundreds or thousands, maybe.
Of cases?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I have had, and I'm probably be conservative, about a little over 500 cases. I know thousands of hours of hypnotherapy sessions.
So when you first started doing this, And now you've done 500 hours at least.
Oh, 500 cases.
Yeah, okay. thousands of hours. Anything really out of the ordinary, or what I'm trying to get at is when you started, you probably had a pretty good idea of what you wanted to do. I know I do on my radio shows, but usually when I start talking to somebody, we go a totally different direction. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And yes. So what's this lead you to believe?
Well, as I mentioned before, we have to go where the research takes us. So I feel that because the examinations revolve mainly around they're studying our DNA and our reproductive system, how we work, how we think, really. They put them through tests.
In other words, you've come to the conclusion it's probably a research project.
Well, I guess we could call it that, but I think because people who have had these experiences have been shown these hybrid babies, and they've been shown young children and adolescent children, that I believe their agenda, their program, is to perfect this hybrid.
So in other words, they're creating a different. They're doing instead of planetary engineering, they're doing genealogical engineering.
I believe that's where the research is taking us.
Why would they do that? Did any of your victims or maybe that's
clients.
Not right time.
Clients,
okay. I'm not talking about you, the victims themselves or the ETs, but maybe that's not even right.
Well, you know, some people don't mind the abductee word. Other people like experiencer. You know, I feel that it's up to the individual to.
Well, as a matter of fact, it is. I know in communications we say things, and a lot of people take it a different way didn't mean at all. So I guess people have different reactions of what was done to them.
Absolutely. And they react differently. Everybody reacts differently.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good that they're taking women and impregnating them. That's what's happening, right?
And also they're taking men and
how do they do that
samples?
With the men?
Because
I've had several men on that you give pretty emotional stories almost as much as the women do.
And they do. Because
they feel violated, too.
It's not a sexual act. It's a clinical act. I mean, they're performing a function. They're performing a job. I'm not saying they're malevolent or benevolent. I think they have a program. I think they have a job to do. And I feel that at some point, they're going to be among us if they aren't already.
Yeah, there's a lot of people believe they are among us. And if you go back to some of these cases, Betty and Barney Hill way back in the 60s, and other cases probably before that that nobody talked about in those times.
Yes.
You would think that they probably have quite a few because everything multiplies as you go along. So what I'm trying to get at is I believe what you're saying, and I believe that's what's happening because people keep telling me that's what's happening that have been through it over the years, but I still haven't figured the angle by the ETs themselves. Do they want a better race, or do you know? Has anybody?
We don't. I mean, it's difficult to draw a definite conclusion, which I can't do right now, but their program seems to revolve around or center around the hybrid program. And I've already had a couple of cases of people who feel that they have met possibly an alien being who looks very human but still has special qualities, special powers that we humans don't have. We can't control each other by looking into each other's eyes. You know, we can't read each other's minds. So they look human, but they still have these alien powers.
Have you had someone come to you sometime or another that might have some of these alien powers that you suspect he might have them and they're not aware of it? Or do if a hybrid has these powers, they know it?
Yeah, the the cases of, that I have come across, and I have even gone back to my cases to look back at the data, because at that time we weren't paying attention to, you know, the hybrids or the human-looking hybrids. They know that they have this power. I mean, they know that they are not completely like us.
And here again, have you been able to figure out who they are, the ETs?
No.
It a group?
We haven't figured out really where they're from, you know.
Your hunch, you feel it's a galaxy far, far away or another dimension, or you just don't know?
You know, it could be all of the above.
Uh-huh.
We just know that the people who are experiencing these abductions or experiences are taken from their environment to, you know, pardon the pun, but an alien environment, and then they're put back.
Now, in front of you have a DVD there. Tell me about that.
Yes, this is from Secrets of the Underground, and it's a series. This volume one is my interview with Bud Hopkins. We did an interview together with director, producer Brandon Scott, and it is debuting here at Roswell, and will be up on the website. I forgot, I just drew a blank.
We have a link to it, so that's all right. We got the information from your PR.
From Secrets of the Underground.
Yeah, right. Okay. He's
help me with, this is going to be on Amazon.
Amazon.com, right.
Amazon. And, but we're having a special here for the conference. Amazon, I believe it's $20 plus shipping here. We're selling it for $15. But it's a, in the interview, Bud and I talk about the our work with these cases and the hybrid program.
Now, you've done lots of things with Bud Hopkins, obviously, here. You did a DVD with him. We've known Bud over the years, so we respect him a lot. How do you guys get along on your research? Do you agree or not agree?
Pretty much, he's my mentor, really. I mean, I studied with Bud years ago. And we have, you know, what I've done with them is compare cases. I wanted to make sure I was on track with the, the typical abduction experience. And so far, we have been seeing eye to eye. Of course, you know, we as researchers, we all respect each other.
He's had some pretty spectacular cases, and I'm sure you have too.
Oh, well, he's had the, of course, the Linda Cortili case.
Yeah,
and
right.
I spent some time with Linda in New York, and that's an incredible case. And she's an incredible individual.
Most people know what we're talking about, but many people don't. Tell us briefly about Linda Cortili.
Linda Cortili lives in New York, in Manhattan, and was one night taken out of her bedroom through her window and onto a waiting craft, but in front of several witnesses, including a high-ranking government official from another country and his bodyguards. And
right there by the UN, if I remember.
That's right. And
yeah, right.
Fishermen who were working late at night witnessed this. There were several witnesses that came forward, and Bud had not had a chance to interview them. But it was almost, as Bud was explaining it, that they showed themselves this time. I mean, they're able to cloak themselves, they're able to walk through walls, they're able to do all of these things. And perhaps they knew about this government official. And perhaps they wanted to be seen.
It seems
time.
To me that, I don't understand it exactly, but every once in a while, they want people to know they're around, to keep the story alive. You know, maybe it's a grassroots thing they're trying to do with the people. I don't know.
Well, I've had several clients and my serial members and my support group. One of them came up with scratches on his face the next morning, and he remembers hearing a voice saying, "We're not going away. We're not going anywhere." It's almost like they gave him an indication, a physical indication
so
that something happened.
So you do have
happened.
Evidence of some physical evidence.
Absolutely, yes. And I do show this in my presentation.
We will be right back, and I'm going to get in. I love the part about the scratching the face, so maybe you have another gory story for me. You know me. We'll be right back. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from a really nice place. It used to be Denny's years ago, but they have really remodeled the place. It's called the Cover Up Cafe, right down the street from the UFO Museum, and it's open every day. So if you're in Roswell, come by. We'll be right back with more. Don't go away.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate.
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. This is Jerry Pippin. We're back at the Cover Up Cafe, and we really appreciate the audience here. Let everybody know we're broadcasting. Yvonne Smith is here. We're talking basically about abductions, and does the term hypnotherapist, is that right?
Yes, or, okay. Yes. Certified hypnotherapist.
And so we were talking about some of the incidents, and we'll get to some more of those in a minute, but this is pretty interesting. You're sure this is really your name? You got a business card here. Aileen Girate?
No, Aileen.
Aileen, okay. Almost like a little A-N-N. Yeah. Aileen, okay. Up at Area 51. She told me earlier that you listened to some of our Laughlin shows.
All of them.
And you heard of Vaughn, I'm sure, if you did that. You have a question?
Yes, I was more interested in what she was saying about the scratching of the face, because I know of another case like that.
Yes, it's more physical evidence that they left behind, and I believe, once again, as we were talking about the Linda Cortili case, how they wanted to be seen,
mm-hmm.
They wanted this particular person to know that this is happening, and he heard a voice. You know, they do speak to people telepathically, and this gentleman heard, we're not going away.
Really?
And yes, and so when he came to me, and he said he woke up with a, I believe it was like a scratch on his forehead, and he says, I don't have a cat. But he said when he heard that voice and he realized that no matter, you know, what he does, they're always going to be there. He's had this experience all his life, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like once again, they have left physical evidence. The physical evidence right now that I have when I present, of course, are the body marks that come up overnight.
Right.
And some of them look almost healed, but these people didn't go to bed with these marks, and they come up in triangular shapes.
I've had those marks too.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Eileen. I got to ask a question about that. These marks, do they ever get infected?
Let me see. I have to think. I've had so many of them.
Yeah. Okay. So it's fairly common.
But I would say, if I have to think about it,
there's not a problem there. Then.
No, they've come up with marks, but also feeling flu-like symptoms, feeling ill.
Okay, there's
other symptoms accompanying it, not always, but many times.
Okay, Eileen, I didn't mean to.
Oh, well, I was going to say that I've had marks, too, on myself. I woke up in the morning and I had fingerprints inside both knees and inside of both thighs, and another of our people, because I was the director of the UFO Contact Center International for 20 years, and we had a lot of cases. And this other lady had the same thing the next morning. She lived in Texas. So But the one I was interested in telling you about was a man that was from Galveston, Texas, that was abducted. And he was taken to this big warehouse where he saw this ship that they landed. And the people that got off of it were dressed in suits and hats, like could just interact with anybody. But he knew that they were not good. And he reached out, he doesn't even know why he did this, and he scratched them on the face. The skin peeled off, and under it was dark, real dark skin, wrinkled skin. So he knew it was a facade. And that poor man, he's had everything happen to him, but that's why I was interested in that scratch.
Oh, I see. Okay, how long ago did that happen?
Oh, that happened about 10 years ago, but these things are still happening to him. Mm-hmm. They attack him every night. These are not good people.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to plug your blog here. Let me get it right. UFOExperienceBlog.com?
UFOExperiences.blogspot.com.
Okay, okay. Yeah, got it right. Okay.
Thank
people
you.
Check that out. Thank you very much. How about in Italy? You just came back from there. Pretty much the same story? The same people? I mean, in other countries, they have the same story?
Yes. There have been some people that have come up to me when I've been in Europe and telling me that they related to what I was saying. This particular conference that Paula Harris had sponsored was mainly on Roswell research. And the Italian researchers are unbelievably knowledgeable about the Roswell incident. And what I presented was, you know, I touched on some of my abduction work because it was mostly on Roswell to promote the 60th anniversary. But I also shared my connection with Roswell and the times that I've been here and I had the opportunity of driving out to the crash site, the debris field, with Don Schmidt and Tom Carey.
Right, and they were with us last night here on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that
The Talk of Town, of course, is their new book.
Yes.
And their new witnesses they came up with, and Walter Hout's affidavit.
That's what I read briefly, and I believe it was on the internet. I get many emails from UFO Update.
Sure.
But I was so busy getting ready to come to Roswell that I didn't have a chance to read the entire thing. So I will be getting Don's book and reading the update on that.
Yeah, he goes into great detail, and there's some surprising things about it. Evidently, they do have several witnesses saying there were E.T. bodies and one live E.T. And so we've talked to Walter over the years. You've been to Roswell. You probably met him before
oh,
he passed
yes.
away.
Yes, I'm very happy that I had the opportunity to meet him and get to know him.
I thought he was a pretty sincere man. What did you think?
I think so. I think all the witnesses, I think every single witness that I have met, that I have seen interviewed about the Roswell crash has been very sincere.
Speaking of the Roswell crash, if you took this evidence, especially with what Tom and Don have come up with, and there were some other researchers a little earlier that had some also things that Tom and Don found, if you took that to a court of law, you could probably win a court case on circumstantial evidence that actually something happened in Roswell.
I think so, but as I explained to my audience today, it's, you know, we have a terrible double standard in this country. We walk in and we talk about the Roswell UFO crash and have all this evidence, they're going to throw it out. But if it was something, another type of a case, because I watch court TV too, you know, it would
You're
be
right.
well accepted.
Need to get Catherine Cryer down here. But anyway, I'm just teasing. Yvonne, you working on now? You mentioned the book. You got this DVD. You're going to have more of that.
Yes, of the DVDs for Secrets of the Underground, and also Brandon Scott is debuting his film Alien Secrets here in Roswell on July 7th at the Galaxy 8.
Have you seen that movie?
I have seen it. I was able to get a sneak preview of it, and it's very interesting. I think people will enjoy it.
Can you tell me one of the secrets?
It's almost a parody on, you know, the UFO field and research, and it's fun, but there's a lot of truth thrown in there at the same time. But I think people should go and see it and enjoy it and give us their feedback. I'm not in that particular film. I was interviewed with
Well, that's pretty nice of you to plug his film, and you're not even in it.
Well, he did a great job on our interview with
Maya
Buds and
I
did
know.
A great job putting the DVD together. So I'm really proud of it. But again, I'm working on my book, which is going to be published this winter of 2007, and I'm also getting ready to go to Ireland to lecture there.
Ireland seems to be an interesting place. We go out to the UFO Congress every year, and there are lots of international people there.
Yes.
And always a lot of people from Ireland.
Oh, it was a pleasure meeting Betty Myler from Ireland, and I'm going to be very anxious to share my research from the United States and compare notes with the researchers there.
Yvonne, before we let you go, let's get back to your research and hypnotherapy. When you have people, you have to be careful in that field, and I know you're very professional about it. So is Bud Hopkins.
Yes.
And not everyone, is as professional. So how would a person have wanted to get hypnotherapy, how would they go about it? I guess they'd contact you or Bud or somebody like that, huh?
Right. We find that, especially in the UFO field and with abduction work, a person needs to be pretty well informed about the subject, what kind of questions to ask, be careful not to ask leading questions. Bud has a website, David Jacobs, myself. I get my business is mostly referrals, and when I do shows like yours, Jerry,
right,
I get
right.
calls of people that are interested in sessions. So it's really, a lot of it is word of mouth.
So your next personal appearance will probably be in Ireland?
Yes, unless I may go up to the Bay Area Conference in August.
That's in August, right.
And possibly the MUFON Conference in Denver.
Oh, well, that's coming right up.
That's coming right up.
In August.
They're both coming up very soon.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But definitely September 19th, I'm leaving for Ireland, and that should be an experience. I've never been there, so I'm excited about
well,
that.
Well, it just looks like the soap commercial, Irish Spring.
Right. Oh! I hear it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's what they say. I've not been to Ireland either, so I've seen the commercial. That's it. I live a very exciting life, Yvonne. You have anything I haven't brought out you'd like to bring out in this interview? Something that, we kind of brushed past a couple of things. You got something you'd like the audience to know about?
Oh, just that we're having a great time here in Roswell, sharing all of our research with the audience, with the public, with each other. The UFO phenomenon and the abduction work is still quite a mystery. And I know when I'm interviewed, they want me to draw conclusions, but it's difficult to do that at this point.
So it's a mixed bag, but you do have some leading edges of evidence.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes, absolutely. We have so many similarities in cases.
What are you going to call the book again?
Well, right now the working title is Chosen with a question mark, Recollections of UFO Abductions Through Hypnotherapy. Aileen has a copy of my notes. Of my
not only did
notes.
She ask a good question, but she also has the book to show out. you sure this is not a carnival deal where you have the shill? You know what I mean? before you go, you brought up something that I got to ask, and that's the subject of Chosen. It seems to run in families and groups. Is that true?
Oh, yes. It runs. It starts in childhood and runs within families. It is intergenerational. That's definitely
well,
what we
every
found.
Skeptic and everybody that covers UFOs, they want to know, well, if they chose these people, why didn't they choose high-profile people only, but they seem to choose common, everyday people.
It's, you know, across... It has no barriers. And how do we know they haven't chosen some high-level people?
Well, they probably wouldn't
talk. They just haven't come out of the closet yet.
With that, we're going to close this segment. Yvonne Smith, let's give her a big hand, everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more from the Cover Up Cafe. Don't go away.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over two decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the giant canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv's Grand Canyon Tour.
Hello, everybody. Jerry Pippin back here at the Cover Up Cafe, right down the street from the UFO Museum. Jesse Marcel Jr. is here with us. The last time I talked to you personally, you emailed me from Iraq. How long you been back?
I came back in November of 05, and Thanksgiving Day.
So anyway, we want to thank you right up front for your service to the country.
I appreciate that.
You've been in the Army how long?
More years I want to think about.
Yeah, okay, maybe I shouldn't ask that question.
About 30 or 35
yeah.
years.
Well, I was in the Army 3 years.
Okay, well, hey, there you go.
Let's say, I looked at your book a little bit today. I glanced at it. I was busy doing interviews, so I didn't get a chance to read it. But the guy said, yeah, I bought this, and Jesse signed it for me. And tell me a little bit about that book and what brought it about.
Well, you know, I wanted to get my dad's story cleared, you know, to show that his credentials were correct, that he really knew what he was talking about. So the book basically is based on clearing the air about my dad's training and his ability to distinguish flying saucer debris from a Mogul balloon or radar target debris.
What do you make of this? This is the story that's out right now that your father brought the real stuff up to the general and they substituted with a weather balloon. Did he ever say anything like that to you?
Can you
talk to me about it?
Well, you know, he did swing by the house on his way to the air base with the debris. And that's where I and my mother saw the debris. And it's very strange material. And I didn't really know what it was at that time, but he was then ordered to bring the debris up to...
You were young at that time.
Yeah, I was 11 years old, but old enough to know what I was looking at.
Well, sure.
And my mind was like a sponge soaking up all kind of information.
Yeah.
And he brought the debris to Fort Worth Army Air Force Air Base for the inspection by General Ramey. And I did see a picture taken of him holding some debris in General Ramey's floor. I did not see that picture for years and years. But looking at the picture, he's got this strange look on his face, like, you're kidding me. And he's holding up a very typical Rowan radar target, which is definitely not what we saw in Roswell.
Right. Now, what can you tell our audience, about your dad and his military service? He really didn't talk about it. I guess the Stanton Friedman ran across him. Is that true?
That's correct, you know. He was ordered not to talk about this at the get-go. As a matter of fact, he came home, and after he came back from Fort Worth, sat my mother and myself down and said, don't ever talk about this again. Non-event, didn't happen, so you can't talk about it. And that's the way it was for years. Even in the family, we didn't really discuss this, although we, in the back of our minds, we knew what it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything that we built.
Right. Now, how about you? You went into the military later.
That's correct.
You're a trauma doctor, correct?
Well, a flight surgeon.
Flight surgeon,
yeah.
Okay.
I was a flight surgeon with the Army Medical Corps.
And you've seen a lot of action, a lot of duty and everything. What I'm asking about is, anybody in the military ever say, hey, don't tell anything that your father said, or did it ever come up, or did anybody even know about it?
Well, they as years went on, the story gradually came out. And some
you probably didn't tell them right off the bat.
No, they asked me before I would tell them. I spent many hours in the cockpit of a helicopter, and during the boring parts of the flight, the conversation would come around to, what did I see in Roswell? And I would go over the story again, and they're very interested. As a matter of fact, I've had flag rank officers ask me about this, because they're quite interested also. But there was never any recrimination or any hindrance to my military career because of this.
Now, 60 years, and this story is still alive, going strong, and we're just, getting new revelations all the time. When you wrote this book, did you basically just wanted to set the record straight, or is there something in there that hasn't been told before?
Well, basically I wanted to let people know about my feelings, my mother's feelings, my dad's feelings, and again, the accreditation of my father.
I like human interest stories, and how did your mother feel about all this?
Well, she was kind of closed-mouthed, too, because we were told not to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But every now and then, we just, we would talk a little bit about what really happened there. And the book also contains information about the newest concept of space travel. So there's a lot of science involved with this thing, too.
Yeah, you've been pretty active in at least looking at things.
Well, this what that experience in Roswell did so many years ago engendered my interest in astronomy and cosmology, because I realized at that time we're not the only ones out there, but we have cousins. We have cousins out there, too.
Right.
And they're smarter than we are, because they can get here from wherever they come from.
And you've really probably never wavered from that idea, or did you ever have doubts?
I never had doubts.
Yeah, you were there when he brought it home.
Yeah.
And you knew your dad very well, so you probably didn't try to disguise much.
No. As a flight surgeon, I have training in aviation accident investigation.
Uh-huh.
I've been on some aircraft investigation accidents, but nothing like this was ever seen by me. This is something totally different. So this is about ours.
Okay, you're back in Roswell here. I know a couple of years ago, before you went back to Iraq, maybe it's 3 years ago, you were home on leave, right? I think you came by here.
Yeah, I did. In July of 2005.
I was trying to get an interview with you, but you were really busy, and you were only here for a couple of days.
Yeah, well, I had 2 weeks leave from Iraq at that time, so I flew home, came here to see what the place looks like.
And so what's your feeling about all of the... PR about Roswell. I personally, before you even answer, Jesse, I think really there may be a downside to it, but the upside is it acquaints everybody with the idea.
Yeah, it does. I'm not sure I'd like all the hoopla and fireworks about this thing, because I think it detracts a little bit from the real meaning of what happened there. And that would be my only criticism, but actually I think it's a good thing, too. Certainly been good for Roswell.
It certainly has. Yeah. Even the street signs have the little ETs on them.
Yeah, right.
You saw no photos, or your dad never mentioned the extraterrestrials.
I'm not sure he ever saw those, although some people will put him at the site where the bodies were, but... I think if he'd really seen those, he would have told me.
Yeah.
But he never mentioned that at all. So.
Now he was a, intelligence officer?
He was an intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group. So these are all handpicked guys for their training and their abilities.
Yeah, this was a very elite place.
Oh, very elite, because that's the Atomic Bomb Group
that
dropped the bomb in Japan.
Now, I think some people in Fort Worth that were a higher-ranking officer stayed in touch with your dad all of his life.
Well, maybe so.
I've heard rumors about that. I don't know.
I'm not privy to that information.
You don't know either.
I don't know, but I'm not privy to that.
Yeah. Have you had anybody question you of an official nature about what you remember in this 11-year-old? That you can talk about?
Well, there's one instance that I can't mention names or will not mention names.
Yeah, I understand that.
Where I was, I went into Washington, D.C. and had a meeting with an individual who identified himself as being part of the National Security Council. And we had a meeting in an underground room there under the Capitol building. And when we walked in on this, where this big meeting room was, there was a book on the desk about Roswell. He pointed to that book and said, "This is not fiction." And I said, "I know it's not fiction." So he asked me, "Well, what do you know about this? Tell me all everything you know." So I went ahead and I told him what I saw, what I knew. And I said, "When are you guys going to tell everybody?" If it's up to him, he would have said anytime, but it was not up to him.
Never. So that happens when you compartmentalize anyway. Yeah, a lot of people would like to talk more, and they don't know, and they have natural curiosity.
Exactly.
And so that makes it probably difficult to figure out who's on an official assignment and who's just curious.
Yeah. So that was first and only time anybody in the government confided with me that this is not fiction.
And you said, yeah, you're right.
yep, not fiction.
So. What's happening in your life these days? Do you live up in Montana somewhere?
Yeah, we're in Helena, Montana. I work full-time at the VA hospital at Fort Harrison.
Uh-huh.
I have a clinic there in ear, nose, and throat disease, which is my specialty.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it up there.
Sure. You've had a nice full career, and you're still at it, and I honor you for that.
Well, I'd like to retire.
You're probably like me, old guy, and I just don't want to stop.
Yeah, like an old horse, you don't dare stop. You stop, you die. You can't stop. Right. You got to keep going.
Old habits are hard to break.
You bet.
Anything that you'd like to bring out to our listeners, Jesse, before I let you go, that you think's important that people?
Well, okay. People ask me, well, what did this do to your religious feelings?
Okay.
And I'm a Roman Catholic, and I'm proud to say that. And I would say that, if anything, this increased my faith in God, because that means that God is bigger than we thought he was. And he created this whole universe, and if we're the only ones here, there's a lot of wasted space. So there are others out there, too.
Yeah, I've often wondered about these people who say, well, that shakes my religion, and I don't quite understand that at all.
Yeah,
it kind of enforces it to me.
It reinforces my religion, my religious faith.
Well, Jesse, appreciate you coming by and talking to us tonight. And the book, let's give it a plug here.
Okay, the book is The Roswell Legacy. And if people want to see more about the book, they can go to the website, marceljr.com, or theroswelllegacy.com. And there's a picture of the book with information on ordering it.
Now, we before we leave here, we have a link to that, by the way, so people can also get to it from our website. Nice enough to come do an interview. That's the least we can do.
Well, I appreciate that.
Before you leave, I mentioned Italy, and you were over there with your good friend, Paula Harris.
Paula Harris, yes.
And she's quite a lady.
Yes, she is.
how is it? And you were in Iraq. So how is the attitude in the rest of the world about UFOs?
Well, in Italy, they seem
from
to be,
your experience.
From my in Italy, they seem to be quite interested, because in Rome they had this big meeting with a lot of people who want to know all we knew about UFOs. In Iraq, you know, they're too busy fighting.
Too busy trying to stay alive.
Trying to stay alive at that time. So
right. But do you think there'll ever be an official disclosure?
I think there will be. There has to be. My only hope is that it'll happen during my lifetime, but even if it doesn't, I already know what it was.
Yeah, you were there.
I was there.
Thank you very much. Jesse Marcel, everybody.
Well, Jerry, thank you. Appreciate that.
We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, appreciate it.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
One of the great things about doing shows like here at the Cover Up Cafe is where you get to meet the public, and of course, Roswell, people come from everywhere. We just talked to a man from Georgia who rode a Greyhound bus out here. You're from Texas, right?
Yeah.
Where in Texas?
Odessa.
Odessa. And this is your wife?
It's my wife.
And your name?
Stanley Wilson and Judy Wilson.
Yeah, Judy, say something so we know he really is here with his wife.
Yeah, he goes everywhere with me.
You had an incident.
Yes, in 1973. And it was in the summer. It was daylight. I had worked for the State Highway Department maintenance, and I had come home and took a nap. I was real tired that day, and I went to sleep. Uh-huh. And my grandma, which is my daddy's mama, she called. My wife answered the phone, and she said, "Tell Stanley to wake up." She lived in the actual city of Odessa, but in the western part. And she said, "Tell Stanley to wake up and look. There's a UFO coming y'all's way." We lived out west of Odessa.
Okay.
Out in the boondocks. Not much population. This is 1973. Well, my wife woke me up, and she said, "Your grandma called and said to get up. There's a UFO coming our way." So I got up, sat on the bed a minute, and I said, "Grandma, don't tease."
Yeah.
She's real serious.
You're
She was a businesswoman, real estate.
Uh-huh.
I said, "Maybe I better go look." So I got up, went out and looked back toward town, didn't see anything. Looked south, didn't see anything. Looked north, didn't see anything. But when I looked west, there's a radio tower just about 1 mile from our house. A UFO sitting over it, just like that. Of course, y'all can't see it on the
radio,
but he can. It was a UFO.
It was hovering.
Right. And it was built just curvature on top, flat bottom, looked like stainless steel, no noise, no rotation.
It was just there.
Just there. And it was probably as big as a two-story house. She saw it.
Yes.
My big sister lived two streets over. Her and her husband come flying around the corner, hollering out their window. "Do y'all see it? Do y'all see it? Do y'all see it?" Of course, we see it. They flew up in the yard. We all stood there and watched it in amazement. And I got in my wife's 65 Malibu and start turning the radio on. I said, "That looks like a radio tower to me." And I flipped through the channels, and we found KBZB radio station. And they were reporting that they had static on their radio tower. And I called. I went and looked up the number. This is back, when you had a regular phone.
Right.
I went in the house and looked up that number, and I got that disc jockey. And I said, "The UFO that y'all are talking about that's causing static, we're looking at it." So we talked a little bit. Of course, that's 36 years ago or something. I don't remember exactly what we said. While it was on the radio, she and my brother-in-law and big sister were outside listening to me talk to him in the house. And then we all, of course, went back out and looked at it. And me and Jim, that's my brother-in-law, we decided to go get to the radio tower. So them two stayed in the yard and watched it. Well, I ran to my neighbor's house real quick, too, to try to get a camera. We didn't have one. They weren't home, and there weren't many houses out there, so we didn't have a camera. But anyway, me and Jim decided to go around on 42nd Street, which is our main street out west of town, close to the radio tower. We worked our way around there. It took about 15 minutes because we took a little roads trying to figure out how to get to it, and finally realized we had to go to the main road, go back to it. We went, you got them little dirt roads that go to a radio tower? That's what it was. We went to the very beginning of that road, and me and Jim decided we wasn't going to drive under that.
It was just hovering there
just
over this radio
tower. I was within probably a half a mile.
Could you hear anything?
No. There was no noise. They looked like stainless steel. This is in the daytime. That UFO, from the time we spotted it till it went away, probably a good hour, in the daylight, no storms, clear day, summer. And me and Jim sit there and watched it. And, of course, I don't remember what we said because it's too many years ago. I don't exactly.
Yeah.
Finally, that UFO drifted off of that radio tower, went to the north, made a 90-degree turn, and drifted back to the west, went out of sight. So me and him drove back home, and they quit telling about it on the radio. So I called that disc jockey up. I said, hey, man, I'm the one that was talking to you a little bit ago about that UFO. I said, what happened? Why did you quit telling about that? And he said, because the government told us to shut it down or we're going to lose our license.
Wow.
And I said, is there anything else you can tell me about it? And he said, well, I can tell you this. Our electrician went out there to find out what was causing the static. And he said he got under it. And he said there was hieroglyphics on the bottom of the UFO. Now, I didn't see the bottom of it. I was about a half mile away. I could see the edge and over. But I can tell you this. I didn't see any doors. It looked as though it had been cast. I didn't see any seams, no lights, perfectly silent, no rotation. It just went away and drifted off. But this ain't one of these things you see on TV, just a light in the sky, you know, or at night. This is daylight.
This is the daylight. You can see the whole thing.
Yes, and this is good hour. And my grandma saw it. She saw it, my wife. And my big sister saw it. My brother-in-law saw it. I saw it. The radio technician, electrician saw it. I don't know who he is. And then about 2 weeks later, I called back one more time, and I got that disc jockey again. And I said, hey, man, is there anything else you can tell me? He said, well, I think he told me Channel 7, which was a TV station.
Yeah.
And he said on West University, which is another main road out west of Odessa, he said they took some pictures of UFOs at night above the lights out there. And he said they were going to show them, and the government also told them, you shut it down or you will lose your license. And he said, I don't want to talk about this anymore because I'm afraid I'll lose my job and I'll get in trouble. And this report I gave to UFOevidence.org. So if anybody wants to see it, you look under the decades of the 70s, 1973, Stanley Wilson. And she's got her report there. And my big sister wrote a report, too. My big sister, she thinks it's of the devil, so she really didn't want to do it. And I said, you're going to back me up. You're going to tell what you saw. The only difference in my story and her story and my big sister thought she remembered it dashing off, but it didn't. It was over the tower and just went out to the north and drifted, which my wife said that's what happened.
Yeah, Judy, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And where we watched it, they watched it when it left. My brother-in-law and Stanley watched it from closer to it than we were. But we did see it start off slowly and then make like just a 90-degree turn, and there was no curvature. It was just an instant, I'm going this way, bam, I'm going that way,
right.
And it was gone. It just went off the other way.
Could you make out the strange writing, the hieroglyphics?
No, we couldn't see that from where we were.
Neither one of you.
No, radio technician saw that.
We could just see the shape and the size of it and just, you know, how it just seemed to be floating.
But this was a monster UFO. I mean, I can't swear it. You know, I said on my report that it was like 150 feet. Well, when I wrote that report, I was living in Austin. I've moved back to Odessa now, and I rode out to that radio tower the other day, and my daddy told my nephew, and he's dead now, but he told my nephew, he said, every one of those colors on a radio tower is 50 feet. Well, I didn't know that when I told it. Well, I rode out there and counted them.
That's probably right.
So it's 50 feet, and I count them as 350 feet to the top of that UFO. So that part I had wrong in my report. I said 150, just, you know, wild guess. I didn't know how tall a radio tower was.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure it's 50 feet, but that's
what my dad
said. I've been in radio all my life. I should know that, but I don't. I don't go out to the tower.
Yeah.
You know, you still talk about this like it was yesterday. It made an impression.
I wasn't interested in UFOs at all. But the day that happened, yes. Now, that's why I'm in Roswell, because I'm interested. I know there's people here that have seen them, and I like the people that haven't seen them to know that they're real. You know, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than I can relay my story because it excites me now because I did see. Yeah, it's like yesterday, even though it was 36, 37 years ago. Well, I mean, how many people get to see a UFO for an hour in the daylight, you know, and everybody's always coming against you? Well, that's just a light or that's a balloon. No, man, this was a UFO, unidentified flying object. You want to give me truth serum? Go ahead. You want to give me a lie detector? I don't care.
And I believe you. Hey, thank you very much,
thank
both
you.
Of you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
If you hear the show after the cover-up cafe, Roswell 60th anniversary, never fear. The cafe is here. It's open. Roswell and the legend lives on. Until next time, this is Jerry Pepin. Cheers.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.